attentively to the presentation. From my assessment of the presentation, I think there appears to be some synergy in terms of the reporting. My expectation in general is that we need to contribute towards building a way forward out of this, as opposed to asking questions. I'm not saying we really need to not to ask questions, but given the nature of the report and the manner in which the reports were, we need to contribute towards a way forward and a long-lasting solution. Can I take hands for comments on members? Honorable Lizelle, and then Honorable Ruas, Honorable Muela, Honorable McLover, Honorable Nkwankwa, Honorable Likota, Honorable Janji, Honorable Tito, Honorable Lengwase, Honorable Mkalipi, no, I know you, Mkalipi, and then Honorable Chabane. So I hope everyone has his own number. We can start. Honorable Fandarman.
Yeah, who's that?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I would like to thank all the presenters that presented to us this morning. And I want to say that I'm mindful that we're dealing with a very sensitive matter, because the issue of refugees and those who seek asylum is a sensitive matter. But clearly what we are dealing with this morning is with a group of foreign nationals that have become ungovernable and brazen in their unlawful activities. And I think the very fact that they've gone as far as challenging the sovereignty of our state by attacking our judiciary, by attacking the executive, by attacking our law enforcement officials must be condemned in the strongest possible terms. And really, I struggle to even look internationally where we've seen such examples. And I think also we have to do some introspection, because I think South Africa seems to be a lawless state in some instances, and that's why people feel that they can break laws and get away with it. And in our pack, it's worrying to say the least that both of these group leaders have been arrested. They are out on bail still committing crimes. Just to hear that some of these people that are in their group is facing sexual harassment, for example, it means they're out on bail and they continue to commit crimes. And really, for me, it's a very worrying situation. Minister, I also think we need to start looking at, when we start to talk about, the challenges and how we overcome these, I think we need to start looking at international best practice and start looking at how we welcome refugees into our country. I think these reception centers must be at our borders, at our ports of entry. If we look at international best practice, both in Europe and America, that's how they do it. I don't think you've got the manpower or the resources to be able to try and track every person that enters our country, not in the current state where our country is borderless for all intents and purposes. So really, I think these reception centers need to be at our borders, so that when people enter our country, that we assist them there, and that we are able to make a call whether they're economic migrants or legitimate refugee seekers. I wanted to also ask on the issue of these, we had a present in the pack, I can't remember which annexure it was, of this Cape Town group, there's still 236 that is undocumented. That is still a third of this group. So I wanted to know how long will it take you to verify the credentials or the details of these people. Because I've raised this with you before, Minister, and these Section 22 permits for me is problematic, because I've got on my phone, which I have shared with you before, some people are able to work and live in our country on these Section 22 permits for years on end. I've got 1 year, which somebody's been able to renew since 2014. And, you know, this is exactly where we start to create problems. When South Africans see that people are, economic migrants for all intents and purposes that have come into our country, they claim asylum and then is able to run their businesses and work without Home Affairs ever being able to really, in a timeliest manner, able to assist them. So really, I also want to know, how long will it take to finalize these final applications of this group? I'm glad you cleared the issue. I think the presenter of the City of Cape Town clarified the issue around xenophobia in the Cape Town communities, because I was also wanting to know which instances of xenophobia actually led to these protests. But I was interested to know from which communities. Everybody keeps on referring that they've got homes to go back to. I would like to know which communities do they come from. Because I'm led to believe that when some of them presented themselves to Salt River, they didn't have addresses to give. So I would like to know which communities do they come from. Melissa, I would also like to ask what now? Because clearly these people don't want to be in our country. They don't want to go back to their own countries. We can't assist to send them to other countries. What has been the engagement at an international relations level with your counterparts, both at the African Union and with your ambassadors from the DRC, Rwanda, and Ethiopia, for example? Are we speaking to them to highlight to them that we've got a problem, a big one, and that we need to find solutions with them? Also, Minister, finally, I see that the one group leader, Mr. Balus, he had his permit rejected in 2007. It's now 2020. I really don't think legal processes, as much as I did hear that we've got to exhaust all legal processes, it really cannot take 13 years after we've rejected someone who's not supposed to be within the borders of South Africa, that it can take a legal process 13 years to be able to repatriate him back to his country of origin. Something there, when you talk about the wheels of justice turning really slowly, this is for too much for me. I don't think it can take that long. So what other options has he got open? He's already been arrested. He's out on bail. He's leading an illegal protest. You know, there are so many instances of... He's committing so many crimes. How is it possible that it can take 13 years for us to be able to send him back? And then finally, Minister, I would like to know, when President Ramaphosa addressed us in September during the joint sitting, the historic joint sitting, he spoke about tasking Home Affairs to document all the undocumented migrants within our borders. He made that statement. Also, Minister Taylor recently in his reply to the SONA address also spoke about working with the Department of Home Affairs to document all the undocumented migrants within the borders of South Africa. I really would like to hear this plan about how we're going to go about that, because it's been mentioned more than once as a government program. If you can unpack that for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters. So also just to go back to the beginning, and when this kind of situation starts, what would one's first thought be? And one's first thought would be that this should be a grave concern. If a group of people, a gathering, arrives outside the UNHCR offices en masse, it should be a grave concern to our country. We have a lot of reputational damage over what has happened in the last few years. And these people, they didn't go to Tshwane House, they didn't go to the City of Cape Town's mayoral office and say this is our concern. They went to the UNHCR, and they went to the Department of Home Affairs. You said they wrote a letter to you. Now, my question is, you know, is your first thought a grave concern, or is the first thought that these are refugees and economic migrants and they should probably go back home, which is what the chairperson suggested in the beginning? And what we find now is that when we look at who's documented or not, there's Section 22, Section 24 is there, and it was reported to us in our last meeting that there's very few that were actually undocumented. And this goes back to the danger of treating everybody as one homogeneous group, which is the tragedy in this situation for me. Did you investigate the claims? Did anybody actually go and say, they are saying that they've been attacked, they're here, they're being murdered, etc., etc.? Did anybody actually go and say, let's investigate these claims and come back? Because if that had been done, then these bad elements in this group could have been exposed. They could have been isolated. In all this time that we've been going to court, we could have got the evidence against them and it could have been resolved. With the 1951 Refugee Convention, it talks about the duty to protect. And that's a duty to protect legitimate asylum seekers. And we really missed an opportunity by having that attitude in the beginning that this is a nuisance, it's economic migrants. We missed that opportunity to say, how do we isolate these people with illegitimate intents from people that are being victimized and taken along. And so in this regard, Home Affairs failed these people that we're hearing about. Where we're talking about sexual assault, the assault that's going on, people that seem to be forced to be there. If we just investigated this properly, we might have been able to stop this whole process of coming to Cape Town and the High Court and sorting it out there. Now, the Regulation of Gatherings Act, that's another challenge for me. And it creates a situation here where we have a gathering, which is more than 15 people, and they don't have to apply to anybody to gather. And it created big problems in this regard. So there was a court case that basically waived the requirement that you have to go to the municipality and get permission for a march. And I think it's something we as Parliament need to look at, is how do we address the problem that that creates? It creates a problem where anybody can come to a sidewalk, stand there and say, I'm a gathering, I have a legitimate concern, and then just stay there indefinitely. So for me, that's something that we as Parliament need to look at. But we left it, and now it escalated to what we have today. So there's a theme in the court orders, and the theme is that you establish the ID and the status, you act in accordance with the legislation, so the Refugee Act and the Immigration Act, and then there's either an order to disperse or whatever is going on in that specific situation. And Section 34 of the Cape Town judgment, it says that SAPS has the residual duty to enforce bylaws. So this very court said that SAPS has a duty to implement the bylaws. So if the claim is that the city didn't do it, it's absolutely within law that SAPS must then do it, if the claim is that the city did nothing. Now, we have a plan, apparently. It's called the National Action Plan. So before all of this happened, it was approved by Cabinet in the beginning of 2019, and it was a National Action Plan to combat xenophobia, racism, and discrimination. And I'm just going to quote from that. I'm almost finished. So this plan is to effectively combat xenophobia. The government and police need to publicly acknowledge attacks on foreign nationals and their property and take decisive action. And number two, it requires a multi-sectoral approach premised on the active involvement of different government departments and sectors. So since 2016, we have the city of Johannesburg appealing to Home Affairs. Please, there's issues going on here. There's issues with our informal traders. We need to sit around the table and work out an action plan. And that never happened. The mayor was ignored by one after the other Minister of Home Affairs. And ultimately what happened is it did indeed blow up, as was predicted many years before. So we need to get a plan in place. And the court has given us guidelines for clarity. What needs to happen in these situations? And it needs to be multi-sectoral. So to my understanding, we have the National Action Plan that is waiting to be rolled out. And my question from the Minister is, what is his knowledge of the National Action Plan, and what is happening so far in terms of Home Affairs' role in combating xenophobia in terms of that plan? Then we need to revisit the laws on our gatherings so that we cannot have these indefinite gatherings that go on and on forever, because it was premised on a demonstration, and that was going to somebody. The confusion was, is this international territory? People didn't know what was going on. And we need to get absolute clarification on that so that we have a step-by-step. So the next time we see somebody coming there, we don't assume they're all goodies or baddies, and we know what is the first step, what is the second step, what do we do, who is the stakeholder. Because we need to take advantage of those that are abusing our system. South Africa has fantastic laws, our constitution, that welcomes refugees and asylum seekers into our country. And there are people that are abusing that, and they're abusing people that are here on Section 24s. We've said they're allowed to be here. And we cannot allow that to happen as a committee and as a department minister. And so I'm calling on you to take up that National Action Plan and ensure that the processes happen, that the intergovernmental consultation takes place in terms of that plan which Cabinet approved in 2019. And my final question is, has J.P. Belusa's Section 22 expired? And then what is the process? So you might not be able to answer that now. I suspect that it has just expired. And what is the next step in that regard? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Four Sisters. Chair, let me first acknowledge the and welcome all the presentations presented to us here from the minister up until to the last presentation. I think based on what has been presented to us, I can see there's probably consensus on how to handle this matter that we're faced with. It's important for all of us to note that, Chair, there's no need for us to come in grandstand on this matter, because it's a matter that must be attended to by all of us. Coming here and grandstand, it will not help solve the situation. We are faced with a serious problem here. Saying that, Chair, I want to agree partly with the first speaker, not the last speaker before me, to say South Africa is a country that has got its own laws. Now, as presenters were saying earlier on here, it can't be correct that we allow people to come to South Africa and break our laws and we keep quiet. It's unacceptable, because we've got our own policies, our own laws, and it must be applied. Nobody from South Africa that can go to other countries and do as if he wishes or she wishes and so on, and that matter cannot be attended to. So what I'm trying to say is that each and every country has got its own laws. It is our duty, all of us, to protect our laws as South Africans. Why am I saying that, Chair? It's because people who come to South Africa, whether by right or wrong, whether they've got the permit or not, we need to make sure that at the end of the day, they must follow our laws as South Africans. If they can't, what is it that is stopping us not to send them back wherever they come from? We must send them back. Let's enforce our laws. Let's make sure that those people go back to where they come from, because we can't allow a situation where they will come here to South Africa and do as they wish. No, it's unacceptable, Chair. My last point is that, Chair, let's work together, all of us. We need to stand up and work together. Let's join hands in gloves, because, Honorable Ross, we can't keep on pointing fingers to one another. It will not help the situation. But for us to be able to solve the problem, all of us, we need to stand up and work together. And let us not politicize this matter. It's not a matter of home affairs alone, because I can see some they want to pull to say shift goalposts and so on, and say, no, it's a home affairs, this problem is because it's been caused by home affairs and so on. No. It can't be a home affairs matter alone. It must be a matter of all stakeholders present here, they must stand up and make sure that we defend our country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I first want to address and speak to the silly excuse of the police of not being here to make a presentation. The seriousness of this case, and I must emphasize, the excuse is actually irrelevant. It is arrogant. It shows a contempt not only for Parliament, but for this committee as well. So I don't know whether they have sent a letter or whether they have WhatsApped you. If they WhatsApp, make sure that they WhatsApp their presentation and make sure that every one of us is on that WhatsApp group. I think, Chairperson, what happened in Cape Town is the symptoms and not the cause of the problem. And I want to speak from the bottom of my heart, and I want to say that Home Affairs must take responsibility what happened at Green Market Square. And your point of departure, when you open this meeting, you speak to section Schedule 4 and 5 of the Constitution that speaks to the functions of the various spheres. The Minister joined you. He also speaks to the section 40 and 41 of the Constitution that deals with the regulations, the cooperations of the various bodies and the intergovernmental relationships. And he emphasized how these tiers of governance must work together. Now, I have been there, and I reported here. I didn't want to grandstand, and I even have been in the lines there, and I reported it here where a young boy with his school uniform and his bag, I said to him, I'll let you jump the line. If you have a problem, show me your exam roster. He couldn't. So there's a lot of things happening out there if you go there. But unfortunately, this event, this specific event, is now brought under the spotlight of an eventual clash between the interests of local South Africans through law enforcement agencies and the humanitarian plight. A plight of refugees who claims that they have nowhere to go. Now, the question remains for us as this committee, what happened to the department's exclusive responsibility to tender solutions in this regard? When I came to this committee, I asked, are we not going there, but I understand that we had a busy schedule. We had officials in this organization who have swear under oath of allegiance, but there's no control at our borders. To have a gathering of 230 and 300 people who are not documented, the problem is at the borders. The problem is at Ramatlabama, where we have people at Skilpad's Neck and Ramatlabama who allow people to come in and have their SASSA grants in South Africa. The problem is at Bait Bridge, where people are sitting in the peanut gallery and watching how the monkeys is stealing from the trucks while people are going freely into our country. There's no law enforcement. And this department, Honorable Elise van der Merwe, has asked the question, what is the amount of refugees in this country? There's no response, there's no answer to date. This department don't have stats. We are taking these people that we are dealing with, we must deal with the symptoms. And the symptoms is at the border where the people are entering without documentation. These officers is the problem for us. It is because of them today that Green Market Square and Cape Town became a symbolic of stage where the battle of several other state departments grind themselves in every day. That's why we are sitting here today. But has the Department of Home Affairs have done their work to make sure and ensure that people are not coming into our country unlawfully? We should have not been set here. I mean, Chairperson, one of the primary and practical means to enforce legislation is simple for Home Affairs. It deals with foreign nationals. It deals with refugees. It is also to control who enters this country, who goes out of this country, who stays, and who leaves. The same applies to those who stays and who also work here. We see ourselves that there is no control. As a result, it makes a mockery of the refugees who are led. Actually, the refugees have been led by this happening in an ambush. And the Department of Home Affairs must take responsibility for that. All that the Department of Home Affairs has done to us as the Portfolio Committee in this country is to start dealing with humanitarian issues. It goes along with social as it is presented here, social issues. It goes along with education. It goes along with health. It goes along with houses. This is the burden that has been placed on South Africa. And soon, Zimbabwe will have no food. We all know that. And we know the reason and why. But besides the explicit assignment of the constitutional duty of the Department of Home Affairs, the Act make it clear. I am not aware of any Act being repealed for the Department of Home Affairs in terms of Schedule 40 to deal with immigrants, illegal immigrants in this country. So the Department of Home Affairs must come to the party and they must explain. We are actually barking at the wrong tree here. The Department of Home Affairs must explain the vacuum at the entrance all entrances of refugees and illegal entrances. And if we are not able to deal with this challenge, Chairperson, Green Market Square will be nothing but a visible symptom of a great future illness in this country. So for me, I think the department today is a spectator to a conflict of its own making. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very... Oh, sorry.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm a bit frustrated sitting here because there seems to be this tug of war between the Department of Home Affairs and the City of Cape Town. One arm of government trying to defend itself. I don't think that we are here for that. Colleagues, we are here, South Africans. When you are counting here, you're not accounting here to me as a member of the UDM. You're accounting to me as a member of Parliament who represents the interests and the will of the people of South Africa. I expect you to speak with one voice on these issues. If you have points of disagreement, go out and sort them out. Go and caucus. What we want is a solution. Not these problems to say this didn't do that. It's good that these issues have been ventilated here. But we're not going to sit here and discuss problems, unfortunately. We're not here for that. The other issue here, Minister, is that, you see, this, look at the UN Convention 1951 and other conventions. One cannot help to, you know, from getting the feeling that some of them were written for different contexts. Look at this processing center. The refugee processing center that Honorable Van der Merwe spoke about, that you raised in your input. It says you can't turn someone away up until they've gone to that processing center. And most developed countries would have their processing centers at the border. And I'm sure most developing countries would have their processing center within their countries. And that creates chaos. Because it means then people have to come into the country. If we can't, if you remember correctly, Minister, you answered a question in Parliament last week. I can't remember who asked the question. And the person asked you a specific question to say, are we able to track people who come into the country with 90-day visa, whether or not they leave the country? And the answer was no. Now, how do we track the people who are supposed to be here for 3 and 4 days if we can't track those who are supposed to be here for 90 days? And that's where the problem starts. So we need to solve the problem at those refugee registration centers or processing centers at the border, at the ports of entry. Otherwise, we are going to sit here in a few years' time and discuss the same issue because we'll have a lot of people who are unaccounted in South Africa, unaccounted for. The other issue is, you talk about the convention, the responsibility, the 1951 UN Convention. It talks about the responsibility of that state, the whole state, to protect refugees. I agree. But it rests on the simplifying assumption that refugees and asylum seekers will always behave in those countries. What does it say in an instance where they don't behave, like in this case? It's simple, they must go. But we must isolate the criminal elements so that those who have been misled can be reintegrated into South Africa and to the communities from which they came. But the question is, what happened to the intelligence services of South Africa? In instances like this, aren't you supposed to infiltrate? Infiltrate the group so that you isolate the criminal elements and those who have been misled, so that those who have been misled can be reintegrated into South Africa, but the criminal elements must be taken out of South Africa. It's as simple as that. I also can't understand why I understand that we espouse the values of Ubuntu. I'm saying this as a Pan-Africanist myself, but there's so much that you can tolerate. I was in a meeting on Friday, for instance, Minister, I told you about this, that I was in a meeting here in the townships on Friday. They said, if the state cannot resolve this problem, we're going to sort it ourselves. Why? Because we have that responsibility to enforce our laws. Remember laws. I don't want to come up with fancy definition of laws. I'm not a lawyer. But they are a reflection of how South Africa wishes to organize itself and how South Africans want to be governed. Now, if you undermine laws, you're not undermining a piece of paper that has been passed by Parliament. You're undermining South Africans, the will of the people, how they said they want their affairs to be structured. And that is what South Africans cannot tolerate. And we must go out of these meetings and go there and say, wait, the matter is being attended to, while there's no clear roadmap about how it's going to resolve. That's the issue we have to talk about, Minister. You spoke about speaking to Home Affairs and your counterparts from Namibia. No, you are being true to the African values of Ubuntu. But in Ghanapi, if people want to go to Ghana, there's Ghanapi. They came here from DRC, they didn't go to Canada. They came from other African countries, they didn't go to Canada, they didn't go to Namibia. Now it's the South African government that must be settled with that responsibility to relocate them. Even in instances where the demands are unreasonable. So these are issues where we're saying it's a bit of a problem. Look, for instance, Minister, you speak about there were instances where the people were using, I saw it, I think, in one of the video clips, where people use children as shields because they don't want to be arrested or whatever. But then it places some sectors or people in society above the law. Maybe at some point, if you say, if you continue to do this, we'll have to take the children to our CARES government, have social workers, but you're not going to be above the law or behave in a manner that continues to break our laws because you're a woman. That needs to be communicated at some point. Otherwise, we're going to have 50,000 women doing the same thing who are asylum seekers or refugees here, or that are going to be, are likely to be manipulated by some or other group that has other hidden agendas. It can't be allowed. So there are also allegations. I engaged my colleagues from the DRC as soon as I saw the list of saying some come from the DRC, and some of them have gone back to the DRC, right? Some of them have gone back to the DRC, and I happened to talk to a lot of them. They said, one of them said, his wife was offered money to go and be able to participate. Rather, was asked to give money. They said, no, no, we'll take you to Canada, we'll take you to all these countries, but you must make a financial contribution to the leaders of the group. And she refused. The wife is still here in South Africa. The husband has gone back home. But the wife was told, no, come and participate in the part and parcel of this protest, but you need to pay us, the leaders of the group, some kind of money so that we can be able to sustain the protest and sustain ourselves, but in return we'll take you to the US and Canada, New Zealand eventually. Right? And the wife has a house in Kensington. And the wife was told, no, if you can't come every day, at least come once in a while. Right? Come once in a while to boost our presence so that people can see that this is a growing movement. It's what's happening out there. And it's an issue that we need to deal with. Firstly, as lawmakers, in your instance, as the executive, but there comes a time where you have to stamp your foot down and say enough is enough, where people need to be given ultimatums to say, accept our offer to reintegrate you back into communities from which you came, or we'll take you back to your home countries. It's as simple as that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe just a couple of issues to raise before I get into the way forward issues. We're dealing with a problem here, and from where I'm sitting, the problem is not how people came into the country. The problem that we're having is that doesn't matter how they came, every country has got its laws. And therefore what you're having is that our laws are challenged, are ignored, are not respected. Because the issue of porous borders, we have just passed the border management authority bill, and maybe the minister can tell us how far, because it was 2 or 3 weeks ago when we did that. That is going to help towards a certain way, but that on its own is not going to be a solution. We're a constitutional democracy. Some people who are here in this country, others don't come through borders. They fly into South Africa. But when they are in the country, they ignore the laws. Okay? So the issue is not the borders. The problem is the borders, which must be addressed, and I agree with that. But the issue is how our laws are effective and how they are respected by everybody, whether it's a Chinese or Rwandan or American. That is the issue. I think that we must focus on. So I thought I must start there, because I don't share that kind of concern, because that concern comes very close into being xenophobic when you analyze it. And I really don't want to get into that space. There are two issues here that have been placed in front of us, kind of possible solutions, and I want to deal with them It's two options that at the end, the other one is academic. And we are left with one option. Here are the two options as presented to us. The first one is the reintegration of these displaced communities. The problem with that is that they don't want it. We hear what the UNCHR is saying. Unfortunately, they did not ventilate what they are saying in court. They are saying to us, silently, there are people who are not saying what is being said, who don't know who they are. But to punch further holes into that, because this issue of reintegration, for it to be successful, the city from where I'm sitting listening to them, and I must say, Mr. Bosman and team, I don't appreciate that you came here, there's not even a presentation you're making. It's more of a verbal presentation on a matter as important as this. Now, you are saying 600 people have gone back where they are. There's no indication about the 600, who are the 600, and Liz was asking the question, where are they? Are you able to say to us, where is this 600? I can bet you not, you're not in that position. And yet here you presented that you monitor them on daily basis, that others were Ubering in and out. Others went to, so it means there's information that you have that I think is not finished with us here. But the second point is on your emergency housing issue. If these people, if the 600, for example, I'll give you an example, if the 600 was coming from Khayelitsha, or 400 of them, 4 weeks away where they were in an informal settlement, they no longer have a place there as we speak today. So I don't know when you say they've gone back, they've gone back where? Because there, if you're not there for a week, your place is taken. So in the absence of details, we are told that 100 came from this area. When you say they've gone back, you have monitored. You're able to say precisely they are here. But we're not getting that. Because you are running away, because the issue of the emergency housing is critical here. Because that emergency housing, if those people who are coming from DAF and 400 of them no longer have the place, you still are going to have to implement that emergency housing because they no longer have the place where they were before. So you've got to follow them where they are, and your report is not helping in that regard. So I'm speaking about this issue of integration. If we were to integrate, if they were to agree, it would have been even difficult to do that. UNHCR says it's just the spokespersons that are doing this, because they know these people. But also you make the issues of sexual abuse. I'm not sure if those cases have been reported and how you got hold of, and whether we have stats on that, or it's another gossip that we're dealing with. Because I don't think this is a place for that. It will be important that we have those specific and those things, but that's a serious crime committed. Are you talking about this being a case reported in relation to this, or this is what you have heard when you interacted? And if that is the case, that is not helpful, because we can't deal with such issues. So if we're to integrate today from this meeting, I'm saying we would not be in a position to integrate if they were saying yes, because you are not giving us the details about the roadmap of that integration. It's not here, it's absent. But the integration has been rejected. So it falls off as an option. This is what the country is offering, to reintegrate them where they're coming from. Through your Balusa and others, that has been rejected. There's no other voice. There's no other voice in court. There's no other voice that we know, except what we hear this morning from you, that there are others who are very happy in staying and all of that. So the only option we have, which is left, Chair, is the option that what we're offering is not accepted. The country is offering that. This is rejected out of hand. And therefore, the option that we have, so there's no point in going around it. The option that we have is that, and this is where I wanted the UNHCR to say, how ready are you when we say, please take them back where they come from? Because that's the only option that we have. You need to tell us what is going to be your role in leading that as UNHCR in effecting that option. Home Affairs must also help us with that, to say, if this is the option that is in front of you, what are the kind of activities that you're going to embark on to do that? So that when we leave this meeting, we leave with some clarity. We can't leave up with a kind of a woolly conclusion as to what is happening. This is really where I am around these issues. The South African human rights, Mr. Chris Nissan, and I want to address you on this. You are saying there are people who are vulnerable amongst these, and again, the unfortunate thing is it's not quantified. You don't know who is vulnerable, who's not vulnerable, where they are, because again, if we're to say we want to ring fence. We take a decision in this committee. Let's ring fence those that are vulnerable. We are not in a position to do that. There are no facts in front of us about who is a vulnerable. It's not enough to say children are vulnerable, women are vulnerable. We have to come here and deal with specifics, because this issue cannot go on forever. In fact, what has happened in the CBD, it has not happened to any South African citizen. Your homelessness people in Cape Town, every night they are being checked and removed from where they are. But yet here you have people next to that church and outside in that CBD for months sitting there. Because once you do that, you are creating a biasness of the law, that the law is biased to certain individuals. And which then is wrong, because what it does, it creates the kind of disrespect and ignoring of the law. And that, for me, is a problem. And my last point, Mr. Ross, I don't know whether you listen to the city. When the city spoke here, it's not a claim that they did not enforce the bylaws. They themselves said, we did not. The city said here, in their presentation. So I don't know where you're coming from with the claim that they did not implement. They said it themselves here to say that there are certain aspects of the bylaws that could not be enforced. You said that.
Chair, can I raise a point of order?
What's the point of order now?
If members are allowed for rebuttal, otherwise other members can also respond to what a member is saying here. The member must respond to the presentations. He's confusing himself here.
Thank you. Number one, the point of order was not granted. So you just continue to speak. That in itself was out of order. And number two, I think I would have seen that the member is out of order and I would have called him to order. I think he's engaging the same way Honorable Ross did. If you feel a bit unsettled, just is about to finish. If you want to talk again against what he says, you'll raise your hand nicely without being out of order. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you for sustaining that, for sustaining your intervention, Chair, and dismissing that point of order. We're going to, if I were to do the rebuttal, I'll do it in the House, not here. This is a portfolio committee meeting. But, Chair, as I conclude, the points that I want to make as part of the way forward is that, and I'm hoping when you conclude you'll make that we need to leave this meeting knowing what are the next actions that are to be done, and not just be lost in all of what has been put in front of us. There is a crisis at hand that we need to respond to, because we don't want that crisis to grow into something that is very much uncontrollable, because it is shaping up to be that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mwela, you are released. Honorable Tito? Before Honorable Tito, Honorable Lekwata. No, Honorable Lekwata, can you sit down? We don't speak standing up in portfolio committee meetings. One of the important reasons, what I have said earlier, that we're not only speaking to address the House, but we're also speaking for the record purposes, because whatever we say here is for the record for Parliament. So please, just speak to the mic.
I beg your pardon, Chair, but in the House...
Pull the mic to the...
We are in the House, and in the House, I'm used to standing up because we are expected to stand up. So I apologize for standing up.
Nothing to do with age, Chair.
I thought that as we listened to the input, principally by Home Affairs, which sought to integrate the roles of various stakeholders in dealing with this problem, that gave us the direction as to where the problem started and the various players, and that if you listened to that and followed it as it flowed, it came to the point that made it clear that various stakeholders had begun to appreciate their roles, guided by the judgments of the court, and so on and so on, and that in fact, the problem we are now left with is that there is a limited group of people that initially came here and decided that they needed to leave this country. And especially here in Cape Town, the group, the central group that persisted in this regard is this group that was here in Cape Town. And even there, that input pointed out that the question is whether these people will accept what has now come out to be government's process. That pointed out that either you go back to the home, you stay here, or go back to the country of your origin. That's what I understood, that we are now at that point. We are there at that point now. These people who came here, never compelled, never invited, but came of their own accord, were accepted by this country. They were allowed to look for permission to stay, and if they're looking for jobs and things like that and so on. But now they have developed a new objective, which we were not ready for, which the United Nations is not ready for, namely that we must take them to Canada. We don't have, you know, a mission in this country or a department that takes people to Canada. We're not a travel agent. So we must now take the decision as South Africans. We must now take that decision, really. But Chairperson, I also want to say something. I really wanted to say something before I deal with that central issue. I was born and bred in South Africa. I have known this country both in the life I've lived. I have read its history, and I've lived through it. This thing that we South Africans hate human beings from elsewhere, we are xenophobic, I've only started to learn about it now. South Africa has always had people from outside of it. From the days of mining, when the diamonds in the 1870s were first discovered in Kimberley, when the mines, gold was discovered in Johannesburg, there have been people from Malawi, there have been people from Zimbabwe, there have been people from, you name it. In fact, even before that, we had people from India to come and grow sugar cane here. And I can tell you more about how many human beings have become South Africans through the history of this country. And I grew up here, frankly, I haven't known what I know today, that we are xenophobic. In fact, I had to go and look at my dictionary, what is this thing about? Now I understand it means you hate people that come from elsewhere and so on. You can go to Soweto, the townships. You can go to any place. We are mixed there. You can go to Kwamashu. You can go to wherever you go. We are all mixed up. Sophia Town, here in District 6, we've been everywhere. If you go to Khayelitsha, Guguletu, and so on, men, we live as one. But when leaders of our country, when people in this country believe that they are xenophobic, it confuses me. Since when? We were on Robben Island, prisoners were arrested for freedom. We were in exile, arrested for freedom. And all of us, black and white and everything. When did we become xenophobic? Because even tribalism, which in the early years, you go to areas like Welkom, Odendaalsvrees, all those mining areas and so on. We had people from Malawi, we had people from everywhere working there, going in and out, going in and out. We intermarried with Basotho, Botswana, and all of that and so on. Please, comrades, why do we accept this kind of thing, which is not true of this country? We are one of the most cosmopolitan countries I know in the world. Really. So I think one of the first things is to do that. The second thing is this. What we have not understood, and I think we must also understand this, many of the people that came here, if you look carefully, they came from conflict-ridden areas. The battles of Biafra, the battles East Africa, you know, when I became a minister and I was sent abroad as a minister of defense, I went into situations which I found people in one country killing each other in millions. Something which I didn't know from where I came from. And some of those people who come here, and I was listening here as the minister was reading through the things, some of them came from those areas. They still came with their fights to come and fight them here, killing each other in this country. So that's why now you find even here in Green Market, whatever you call it, you find that even the group that's supposed to be one group splitting and fighting each other. Coming, it's a conflict that's not born here. And then it's called xenophobia. It comes from outside the country. I was in Cote d'Ivoire and I've seen the battles there and so on and things. Please, comrades, we are a good country. However, we cannot allow people who come from somewhere, bring their differences here, fight them here among themselves. Sure, now and then, some of our own people will be caught up in those battles and things, and things like that. I'm not going to say that we are all angels in South Africa. We are not. But so mistakes here and there. But don't make things which are foreign to South Africa. Don't make them South African. Because they are not. We must now, therefore, confront the fact that some of the people who leave their own country, they don't understand international law. They don't even understand that when we pay our membership to the United Nations, we contribute to the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. They don't understand that. And they think they can now come here because they don't understand that many of those countries, by the way, may not be able to contribute to their membership fees to the United Nations. So maybe they don't get told about that. But here, we pay our money to the United Nations so that we are United Nations compliant with our membership to the United Nations. We do that, and therefore we know that when these people come here, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees must take from the money we have contributed and assist us to look after people that are refugees that have come to this country. I think the minister, you know, went through this. The 1951 protocols that he was talking about, I asked him, members of the committee will bear me out. I asked him the other time, but minister, since the 1951 protocol says that you cannot leave Ethiopia, cross Uganda, cross Rwanda, cross Burundi, cross Malawi, cross until when you come to Africa, say, this is where I want refugee status. It says that, and he agreed with me, it does say that. However, he told me something that left me helpless. He said, you know, we are the only ones now who still look at that. Nobody is interested in that. How is it we got people from Burundi, we got people from Nigeria, we got people from here, we got people far away countries. No, they have come here. Not all of them flew here. Not all of them were in the ships coming here. But they came here. I'm not talking about Cape Town. They came in, they're into Johannesburg, they're in Durban, they're everywhere to say that, aha, this is where we want refugee status. Now, while those things are happening, we are not the only country to look and make sure that everybody is compliant with international law. All other countries must play their role as well. When we live here and we want to go to other countries, we apply. Our government requires us to bring our passports. If we don't have a passport, they say, apply for the passport, we'll give you a passport, and you must tell us where you are going, where are you going to stay, how long are you going to stay there, what will you be doing there, and so on, and when are you going to come back. So we don't just leave and just go out of this country, except only one man I know of recently came back. So now, nevertheless, every one of us don't do it. We don't do that. So why is it these other people are leaving their own countries, crossing them one after the other and so on, and come into our country? And then when they are here, and then they feel now, now we've seen Cape Town, or we've seen Johannesburg, we're now tired, we want to go now to Canada, take us to Canada, take us to Namibia and all of that. And demand, actually demand. No. We have to speak as South Africans. Responsible international responsibility on us dictates that we must say to the other countries, please respect international law as you expect us to respect international law. Please. We will do that. Do it with us. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Minister, last week we were here on, and then in your presentation you told us that you spoke to the Minister of Social Development, and there was a budget actually to give these people a temporary shelter, and then the Social Development of Western Cape refused to meet with you. Now I see here that the City of Cape Town is coming here putting blame in the Home Affairs, and they are running away, and then they are blaming everything on the Home Affairs. And also, Mr. Papi Baloos and the other gentlemen, in the court orders, you are saying that they have provided addresses. Now, you guys, the addresses are there. Aren't you taking initiative to go and see where these people are staying? Because of, you are just coming here and telling us that they have addresses, and then, but you are not doing anything after that. And on the Human Rights Commission, you were telling us that you have spoken to other departments, but they don't want to come on board. Which departments are those departments that don't want to come on board? Because of you are coming here today, is it for the first time you guys are called here? Because it is not for the first time. You must tell us which other departments refuse to come on board in terms of dealing with this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. After all is said and done, what I can say is maybe the City of Cape Town must highlight to us on how far is the process of assessment as they stated it on the court order, the paragraph 4.4 that they were talking of. If the progress can be given to us, we'll be able to say now both the City of Cape Town and both the Home Affairs are ready to start the process of either integrating or either sending people back, because from where I'm sitting, we might say whatever that we might want to say. We might point fingers at each other, but we must arrive at the solution of what needs to be done. And the solution is either these people integrate or they are sent home. So for me, if we are given a progress report on the assessment of individual people that we are talking of, then we'll have a way forward.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You know Al Jamaa's position that there should be no borders in the United States of Africa. The best endeavors of the Minister, his department, the Human Rights Commission, and even the city of Cape Town has not gone unnoticed, and we must thank them for these best endeavors. Mr. Chairman, we need a political solution. Yeah. And it looks like the President must now take the lead, not only as South Africa's head of state, but the head of the African continent. Our position is that there should be a 3-month moratorium and that we must approach the city of Cape Town to help with a Kuilenberg solution, or the Minister of Public Works to give us an empty building where these people can be housed, as the Human Rights Commission have indicated that there are vulnerable people in the group. And that I think the President must make a decision that the green market group, as we call them, should then be repatriated to their own countries. So I know we are going to deal with that on the way forward, but we need a presidential solution. South Africa cannot take further reputational damage and harm. 3-month moratorium, and they should be housed in those 3 months properly, and then within the 3 months sent home. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I can't thank the presenters because I came after the presentation, but I was listening to you when you emphasized on the point that as South Africans, we know of the problem at hand, and we are also interested on the solution. We are invited by the Chief Whip of the ANC to come and attend this meeting. Maybe let me apologize why, because I came late. I started in my committee at COCTA, but my colleague is here. Chairperson, I was listening especially from the members of the committee who are having certain information regarding this issue. But as a member of parliament, as a South African who is privy as well on what is happening in this country regarding this information, I can safely say that it's very sad. It is a very sad situation, because now we as parliamentarians, people who are supposed to debate or to come with solutions regarding this issue, we seem as if we want to isolate this incident. And this is not an isolated incident. Yes, it is happening in Cape Town, also with the background that is given by the minister and all other presenters, but it's not the new incident to happen in South Africa. At some point, it calls a xenophobia. At some point, it calls a refugee that is trying to claim some status. But the fact of the matter is that, Chairperson, you know, the colonial borders that were imposed to us by those who wanted to scramble Africa, now that what we are experiencing, when they tried to separate us as Africans, they knew at the end of the day, we are going to fight over crimes. Those comrades who are from DRC, coming from all over Africa, we must not come here and pretend as if we don't know what is the problem. We must not pretend as if they came here as people who want to be in South Africa. If we want to address this issue, we must be fair to ourselves to say that what makes them to come to South Africa? What is the situation in DRC? What is the situation in Zimbabwe? What is the situation in all other African countries? Then we'll be able to have a solution in South Africa. Because if you want to treat this as an isolation incident, you are not going to come with a solution. We are going to continue to be a cursed nation of African people who always fight each other. Now there are presenters from City of Cape Town and the minister on his presentation, because at least I have a copy of the minister, saying that what was the court order, saying that the City of Cape Town didn't play its role that it was supposed to play. And I was listening to colleagues here also saying that now we want to play a blame game as authorities. Who'll be Home Affairs saying that no, this is not our issue. City of Cape Town saying no, this is not our issue. So no one wants to take a responsibility here. And the court order, as per the presentation of the minister, is saying that there is a court order or a clause in the court order that suggests that go and find a lasting solution. And if I remember very well, the former mayor of Johannesburg came here and the minister came here about not the very same issue but the similar issue. If I'm not mistaken, Chairperson, in Durban, in December, during December, there was a similar situation. So it means that you are going to come here and listen to a crisis that is happening in Cape Town. Next month you are coming back to listen to a crisis that is happening in Durban. So it means that there is a crisis somewhere. There's no one who don't want to take a responsibility. So I don't want to tell much on that one. But we must separate these things, Chairperson, if you want to come with a solution. Those who are responsible, they must take the full responsibility. We are for, as the colleague from Al Jamaa said, we know their position. You know the EFF position on this matter, especially about the Africa must unite. But at the same time, we can't be saying if there's an anarchy, we must also say that no, it's about pan-Africanism. So that's why we have to treat issue by issue. Because even South Africans, if they commit crime, they must also be punished. So what I'm saying is that, Chairperson, let us have a department that has a clear plan on how to deal with the situation. Let us review our immigration policy, Minister. Let us work with all stakeholders, police. If there's someone who have committed crime, who have someone who think that in South Africa there's no law, let us show them that there's laws in South Africa. But we must not do that just to prove a point that if a crime is committed by a person from DRC, if a crime is committed by a person from Zimbabwe, therefore that person is a criminal. City of Cape Town, we know the history of City of Cape Town. They don't treat black people from other countries as they are treating Europeans. That is a fact. And if we can't address that situation, we are not going to have a lasting solution that is suggested per court order. One colleague said that we need a political will. We need a political situation. We need a political solution. That's where we all have to come together and said, what is it? What is it that needs to be done in order to have this thing not happen again? As I was also making a reference of what happened in Durban in 2019. Now we are told here in one of the presentations that the Department of Home Affairs, they didn't continue with the verification because kids, women were arrested. That's why I'm saying that we have to separate what is happening. If there are criminals within those people, those criminals must be dealt with. But we can't be taking everyone on the same blanket to say that because now we are from DRC, whether you're a woman or a child, go to jail. What kind of an approach is that? We're not going to win this war. So let us go back to a drawing board, Minister. If you remember very well, when the former mayor of Johannesburg was here, we corrected him as well to say that if we want to treat black people as criminal, as criminals, we are not going to get it mayor. Unfortunately, it's not a mayor. So that is the advice as well with the department, because immigration lies with the Department of Home Affairs. Whether it's happening under Tswane, whether it's happening under Cape Town, but the department must be on top of the things, the acting DG. Let us plan better. Because if we fail this department to have clear programs on how to deal with these immigrations in South Africa, it's going to be worse, if it's not worse now. So my proposal, Chairperson, the Home Affairs must be on top of things in coming with solutions. Even on your presentation, Minister, we are saying that you even communicated with three mayors through SALGA, but they were reluctant to deal with situations. It seems to me the Department of Home Affairs, they are treating these issues with soft gloves. So I'm squarely suggesting that department, they must on top of the issues. The minister, as a member of the executive, must talk to other colleagues, like the Minister of Police, like other ministers, the economic development. Those ministers who can said in terms of the programs of our departments, these are the solutions, because if we can't say what is the real issue, why we find ourselves in this issue, in this situation, it won't have any solution at hand. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Chair. I think our colleagues have labored on a number of issues. I want to start, Chair, there by Honorable McClover on the apology that you have presented of the police, the joint provoke. I think I agree with him that it's unacceptable that this high-level meeting that seeks to deal with a critical matter that affects ourselves and society, they are not here. And I don't think that that apology is genuine, because there's an indication that they have totally withdrawn from the any meetings of that deals with this thing of refugees. There's a correspondence to that effect, Chair, that they'll no longer attend these meetings until the chief operation officer instructs them to attend. I think Umar wants to just to emphasize that in a manner that the Honorable Maktuba has raised. Chair, there are two issues I think which we must also appreciate, that the focus of the issues is on the current matter that we're dealing with. And the department over time has reported to the portfolio committee on the overall challenges that affects them in the borders throughout. And what are the weaknesses that the department, we are the first one to have accepted that these are the challenges and the challenges that we must confront. And the committee has impressed around those issues. So just to not to allay, to focus that the department is worse in terms of its function, I don't think that should be correct, because we members of the portfolio committee, we are the ones who have accepted some of the challenges that the department has been facing and some of the strife in terms of mitigating those are the challenges. Hence, we have just passed the Border Management Authority Bill, that part of the issues that affect the border, our border lines, it will able to respond execution of all stakeholders that are involved in terms of the organs of state. I think that is a matter that we must emphasize. I think the presentation both of the Minister of the Home Affairs and the UNHCR, it gives us action plan on how we must move forward from here. Because two of the issues that the minister is raising, issue of the integration and the option that we must take these people back from the country of origin. And it's true, Chair, that there's no country that can allow its citizens or members of foreign nations to undermine its constitution and the law. There's no country that can allow its own citizens to show a middle finger to the constitution of the republic they are residing on. And we must take a same decision as the parliament, because we preside, we take oath to preside over the constitution of the republic. We are the ones who say, yes, we'll confine ourselves to the constitution of the republic, which by interpretation it means all of us who are residents and foreign nationals, we must subject ourselves to those provisions. I think as a collective of the committee, we must be able to rise to that space of the constitution. The portfolio committee and the department and the presentations that are arising here, there has been a commitment to try to resolve this matter, Chairperson, to try and reconcile the challenges that are faced by our brothers and sisters from foreign nationals. And that commitment from the other part is not there, Chairperson. And we must fold our arms and know, let's give it a bite and able to see whether it's possible for members of the nation to can respect the constitution of the law. It can't be allowed at this stage. We understand that the borders have been imposed by colonial powers, historically. But the United Nations recognized that's why there are protocols, conventions on how refugees must be treated to all member nations' countries, Chairperson. So we've reached a point where we may need to be firm as a country so that all member and citizens are not above the constitution. There are refugees around the country who are integrating communities. You go as far to Matimbo in Musina there. You go as far as Giani and somewhere in Hazelview. We live with them. They are integrated in our systems. They respect the constitution of the country, of the republic. They respect the laws of the republic. They are not undermining anything. They comply to the constitution of the republic. Now, we can't have... This is an isolated incident. We must not afraid we confronted it, Chairperson. It's an isolated incident that we must venture directly and affirm the authority of the Republic. If we don't do affirmation on this thing, Chair, tomorrow, as Honorable M. Kalipa is raising, we'll enter into another area to solve this problem. We must stop it when it emerges, Chair. We've met here with the Salga, Honorable Minister, and you may find that the municipalities that you are raising are not only these municipalities, Tswane or here and other things. We may need to go back to Salga, Chair, in the manner we're engaging this forum, so that Salga participates proactively on this matter of the municipality, because their jurisdiction in terms of managing the municipalities and the bylaws starting to be effected. If the municipality can able to affirm its bylaws and shift blame to the Home Affairs, I don't think that is correct, Chair. We must be able to perform on the areas and cooperate on the laws that govern this country. I'm of the view, Chair, that the Honourable Father Mepe said the minister must engage, whether he has engaged with counterparts. When we are affected by this, we face this thing of the xenophobia 2 years or so. The president has taken envoys to countries to apologize on this and that. We must invoke that process. because we can't allow our country to be under. We don't do the same, Minister. Perhaps unless we do the same to other countries, as South Africans, we undermine countries' constitutions and the laws. We don't do that. We respect the laws of other members' countries. So I propose, Chair, I agree with the approach that the department on the two occasions, options, that we'll be bound to take that, Chair, as to affirm the centrality of the constitution of the Republic, but consciously that we must be able to integrate and protect our African brothers and sisters. I agree, Chair, that the issue of misleading our people, Chair, there's this incident that these leaders who are Honorable Kwangwa says that they are funding this protest. They are mobilizing that people must undermine the constitution and the rule of law. Anyone that must do that, Chair, we must bat it. We must be able to collectively speak with one voice where there's dissent to undermine the constitution of the Republic. I support, Chair, that we must move in line with what the department is proposing and able to defend the constitution of the Republic. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, the reason why I invited all chief whips of the 14 parties is because this matter affects all South Africans, and therefore a political engagement and political will is expected of all of us to get a very lasting solution. Chair, I fully agree that we need a plan of action, an integrated approach which is going to involve the national, provincial, as well as local government. Whatever we come up with, it must be able to assist throughout the country wherever there are such challenges. Chair, we must condemn with strongest words or possibly where these incidents happened, especially when our three arms of state get undermined. And we must be able to isolate political challenges vis-a-vis criminal elements. And all of us have been migrants in one way or another. Whether you go to any country with your visa and a valid passport, but you must adhere to the constitution and the laws of that particular country. Therefore, we cannot have people who come here and undermine us. The repatriation timelines in that plan of action must be very clear. Integration back to communities must be based on documented foreign nationals. Not everybody must just be integrated just because he or she is in the country. And proper processing must be dealt with. Chair, I think the presentations that were done here are in a way assisting us to move forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chief Whip of the Majority Party. I think having listened to members and assessing the presentation, I think we were almost towards one direction. I'm quite very happy that ordinarily, if it was according to me, Minister, I'll be giving a summary of the discussion, but given the procedures of how Parliament Committee runs, I would want to give those who presented at least 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes to answer to what might have appeared to be questions and have general comments on what. But we're not bound to, if you don't have any comment, you'll be bound by the action plan that will be coming. The city of Cape Town, do you want to say something?
Yes.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies. All right, so the first question that I picked up was that the city said that we did not enforce our bylaws. sorry, this was due to being in court with the application, and we could not enforce force them, so that's why we didn't. And the second one was the request for a report on the assessment in terms of 4.4. I will go back with this request, and we can revert. But we did offer, as you know, we did offer a place in shelters to people which were also refused. So that makes the situation very difficult because we know everything, or it seems like everything offered will be refused. Thank you.
South African Human Rights Commission.
Thank you, Chairperson. At the beginning of all our interactions and stakeholder meetings, there was a roadmap produced, and the different levels of government that was at that meeting could not agree, and that's where that disagreement came from, on that roadmap that we need to, how to deal with the situation. The second issue is that there were cases laid with the South African Police Service on the sexual violence cases that were there. So there are cases that was laid at SAPS. When we talk about the vulnerability, it is our interaction on a daily basis with people that come to our office that complain and see what they're going through. But the mere fact that there are children right now out there in the field with no toilets, no sanitation, no water, and women. And so our concern is that about those who are destitute, because those who lost everything in the process. And therefore also I can say, as I had a discussion with the minister over the weekend, to say there are people now coming from that group, that's the Green Market Square group, who are now saying they want to be integrated. And we need to look at that process. We involve with the United Nations High Commission on Refugees on it, and to say how can we help and take those people who now want to leave and so on. And I think our concern is, Chairperson, is the group in the church, because they are refusing to get out there. They're refusing to allow people in there. People are blocking the doors of the church and only allow selective people in and out of the church. The minister of the church is a broken person. He says that the place of sanctuary has now been turned into a place of filth. And so we need to engage that group as well. So from our side, yes, we will continue to engage and assist this process and a roadmap for reintegration into society. Where they come from, ma'am? To your Chairperson, they come from all over the peninsula, over the metro. There are only one or two people that came from Kuruman in the Northern Cape, and one group, one family that came from Durban. But when, through your Chair, when they were talking about we're going to Canada, people from all over came because of this dream, and there are some people that are sitting now at Betekan Street who are not willing to move because they, in their minds, still think that the group in the church will get preference, because they still believe the myth that they will be going somewhere. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. UNHCR.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you again, everyone, for your comments and your feedback. I will touch a little bit on the question that was put forward on the issue of repatriation. And a point of clarification, UNHCR does support voluntary repatriation to places of origin that are conducive and safe for sustainable return in dignity. And the key word in this is voluntary. And we would like to take a moment just to emphasize that we recognize that some of the protesters have engaged in criminal conduct, and we emphasize, as has been stated by many of the members here, that refugees are not above the law in South Africa. However, UNHCR would like to urge stakeholders to be mindful of the principle of non-refoulement, which is a cornerstone of international refugee protection and stated under both the 1951 and the 1969 OAU Convention on Refugees. And this prohibits the expulsion or forcible return of a recognized refugee to the borders of a territory where his or her life or freedom would be threatened. It is therefore for this that refugees and asylum seekers that engage in criminal activity are subject to national criminal justice system, just like everyone else in the country. So from this, I think that we can take a few positive points, because it is good to see that we now have a comprehensive approach moving forward, that there is engagement from multiple stakeholders, and as we have said, UNHCR does stand ready to play our part and support. And we would just try to re-emphasize, as has been stated also by members here, that we have to distinguish between those who have committed criminal acts and those who are able or willing to return to their communities and provide the necessary support for those who are. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to emphasize that this country is a constitutional democracy in which whether you are in the executive, legislature, or local government, finally, when the courts have ruled, that must be obeyed. I came here with judgments, and I quote them. I was not speaking from my head. There are judgments here which say so and so must do this, so and so. Because we are three spheres of government, each one has got their responsibility. And that responsibility, they exercise through the power from parliament, even the budget. You know, you don't exercise a responsibility where there's no budget. So that's the first thing I want to say. The second thing, I think it would be wrong to regard everybody who is here from any country as an illegal migrant. It's wrong. Yeah. And I've given you statistics here, but you keep on saying, no, Home Affairs did not do this and that. Now, I gave you studies from Pretoria that there were 38 people who were undocumented, but 356 were. Which means the 356 have got the right to be in South Africa. And once they are here, wherever they stay, they fall under that local authority. Mm-hmm. Yes. You can't say because this person is from DRC or is from Ethiopia, etc. When they want the water, it's Water Affairs, it's Home Affairs. When they want the toilet, it's Home Affairs. Because this is what I hear some of the members saying here when in their quest to try and put every blame on Home Affairs. Those people have got the right to be here by laws passed by this parliament. In fact, those who have got the status of as refugee, Section 24 permit, which I've written here, in terms of that, once you are a refugee, you have got all the rights that South Africans have, except the right to vote. Yes. Once we give you a Section 24 permit, every right that South Africans have got, you have got it, except the right to vote. Now, you don't get those rights from Home Affairs. If it's the right to housing, the right to water, whatever, the people who are in that sphere must do it. Now this tendency of, that's why I wrote to Salga, this tendency of saying, oh, this is foreign national, Home Affairs, Home Affairs. I even tried to communicate with the mayor of Tshwane. That's why I wrote him a letter. Because immediately after the first court case, when he realized where the judge is heading to, he wrote me a letter and said, no, this is your matter now. It's a bylaw issue. There are bylaws in this country. There are different laws in this country which are executed by police, by social development, by municipalities, by trade and industry. You can't say because a foreign national who has got a Section 24 permit has built a shop illegally, that's Home Affairs. No. It's DDI which knows how to give licenses for shops. And I'm sorry, you said we must not point fingers, but we need to correct things here. Honorable Lewis, and it's not for the first time, I must state it here openly. When the mayor of Tshwane wrote me a letter running away from implementing what the residents there were saying, the residents were simply asking, I have built a house here, somebody has put a tent on my gate, I'm paying rates to you, I'm a ratepayer, please remove that person, right? And now the mayor throws it and says, because it's a foreigner, it's Home Affairs. And I ask, if you have got a bylaw that says nobody must urinate in the center, please allow me to use that strong word. Nobody is allowed to urinate in the center of town. That's a bylaw. When you see somebody doing that, do you go and check which country he comes from and his status? Do you do that? Or do you say, no, that's wrong? I'm going to take action. So I wrote the mayor to tell him that. He took my letter and gave it to you.
Mr. Rios here in Parliament, meaning he's playing party political. Because if he wanted to report to Home Affairs, he should have given it to the chairperson. If he didn't agree with it, he gave it to a member of his party. And do you know why? How I know? Because you wrote an article in The Citizen condemning Home Affairs and saying they are not doing its work. And I realized this thing's written here. As for my letter, now it's wrong. If we are going to work like that, as Honorable Gwangwa here said, we are resolving this issue as South Africans. If we are not going to become South Africans, we remain like fools. Now he says no. The section in this law, I'll show you some of the things that worry me. Section 34.
Can you summarize, Minister?
Yeah, section 34 in this judgment. He is saying no. It says the SEPs have a residual duty to enforce bylaws. Leaving deliberately what is written below it, where the judge said, I have been unable to find any evidence that the city or any of its officials at any stage attended to a member of SEPs to file a complaint in respect of an offense as envisaged in clause 23 of the bylaw. This is in the judgment. He reads above and leaves immediately what is written below. It can be the way in which you solve problems. Finally, Chair, the judgment by the, you know, the, when the judge said people must be assessed, this is not a joke. Everything that you are saying here depends on that judgment. He wanted people to be assessed individually so that we know who is this, where does he stay, to check who are scalems there. And that job was given to the city because the judge believed they know addresses, not Home Affairs, because the people reside within the city. And say this one doesn't have accommodation, it meets an emergency one for a short period of time until the issue resolves, etc. That list will have helped to know who has got what address, whose house was taken away when they were here and all that. Then it will help us, even in the integration, it's not there. On our side, this Home Affairs, they said we must assess. We have assessed. We even have a list of names, but the judge said we must not release them. We have got the name of every individual. Who is this one? What is their status? How did they come? Here I just gave you figures and say so many are documented, so many are not documented. That is doing our job as Home Affairs. But the assessment of whether people are in distress, as the judge has said here, was given to the municipality. And they can't keep on using their political leaders here to throw it at Home Affairs. This is their responsibility, even in the Constitution. Otherwise, we won't be able to resolve this issue. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, members. I think at the center of these things that were enjoined by the Constitution, I've made mention of this, Chapter 3 of the Constitution enjoins all three spheres of government to cooperate with one another in attending to the needs of the citizens. And to this far in the committee, at least of Home Affairs, when we deliberate on issues, we try as far as possible not to be party political. We try to be representatives of South Africans without looking at the cap one is bringing, because it may destroy the objectivity with which we must look at the matter. So I think from the discussion and the presentation, it will appear that we are generally agreeing on the way forward. What we have just not said was the issue of the time frames with which people must come back and report to Parliament on how far and what is an exact roadmap in terms of the assessment that needs to be done, the integration, because we will need to be told strictly. This is a letter which was sent to these people to integrate. They must respond within a specific time frame. If they have not, within this specific time frame, these people are going to be passed back to their countries. This is a decision, Minister, on your recommendation, and I think we are not supporting that very lightly. We are taking care of the international law, our international obligation, the domestic law that is applying, and any other stakeholder, because we all agree that actually a technique of decision making is consultation. So part of the, what we are doing now is to consult, because we have agreed on the constitutional democracy. Actually, if you check in the countries that are there all over the world, we're amongst the best in terms of human rights. Actually, part of the reason why people decide to run to South Africa when they have problems elsewhere is because of our DNA foundation of human rights, our belief to women rights, and how we've been founded as a country on the basis of these human rights principles. But the matter that is before us now, I think it's quite a serious matter, and it does require unity. And this unity must be displayed by Parliament. It's very important. You know, if you go to United States of America, whenever they discuss, whether they come from Parliament or they come from executive, even from NGOs, if they speak, the first thing that, as a yardstick against which they check whatever they say, is what we call national interest. And all of them, they are agreed on what is in the national interest. So I think dealing with this matter of these refugees, stroke economic migrants, it's in the national interest of ordinary South Africans. And if we are unable as a legislature to give proper direction, we will be blamed by even those who have put us into office. Not only them, but even those ancestors of this constitution that we are running will also blame us for not taking a decisive decision. So against this background, I think the recommendation, Minister, must be followed by a timeline of an action plan, as members have suggested, an action plan of when is this going to happen, when is this going to happen, so that we are able to report directly and we are able to do justice to this specific matter. But I would like to thank you members for engaging in such an objective way, and I would like to thank all other organizations that have came. We are going to take up the issue of the Prof. Joint of the apology, but I must say that we have also invited this steering committee of these refugees, which they have not made an indication whether they will come or not, but they are not here, because we wanted to get also from their side, what are the issues that they may be getting assistance on or not assistance on the issues that relates to the department or the city. But our request is that the city must work with the department. The department must work with the city. We may be understanding the challenges that are there, but while we are required by the Constitution to work with one another, to develop a common approach. So I think the committee will give the department, I think, a period of a month to try to resolve some of these issues that are hanging, but in a month to come up with an active and a progressive plan on how do we move out of this situation in a manner that is legally compliant and dignified and upholding the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. I think with those words, I want to close this meeting. Honorable Ross, want to say something?
Yes, Jay, I'm not the only one. I think we're struggling to understand what is this supposed way forward that we are agreeing to. Is it item 47 on this on the second report? I mean, we're talking about we agree to the proposed way forward, but what is that? Where is it?
What I'm saying is a way forward. This submission that I'm doing is now a way forward of this meeting, that we're giving the space of a month to the city and the department to draft a comprehensive plan, which will be talking to all the issues that they've raised, starting from assessment of the people that are there, up until to the point where people are taken back home. because we are responding to the recommendation which was the, in the presentation of the minister. What I'm saying is the way forward. Honorable Lizard?
No, I also wanted clarity because the resolution, so are you saying that in a month from now we'll meet back here and then we'll hear in terms of how many people are left in the church, how many people have opted to go back into their communities, how many people have opted to go back, because there were also some questions that weren't answered in terms of the engagements with our counterparts in the AU ambassadors. So we'll get all of that in a month's time, Chairperson.
Yeah, no, thank you. What I'm saying is that from here, the department must engage in a process, from when we leave this meeting. And in a month's time, we'll be getting a comprehensive report. That report will be including those that have been deported. Because we can't sit here and say deport this one and that one. It's a comprehensive assessment that would have been done by both the city and the department. So in a month's time when they come back, they would be reporting to us that the following were indeed deported, the following this what has happened and so on. So it's not that we're leaving anything to chance. From here it's a matter of implementation. We'll be receiving a report. So we're giving the department to do what is in its recommendation from this, but working together with the city and all other stakeholders, by the way, that are there. But we will as a committee, on a weekly basis monitor what is happening so that there must be movement on what is happening. We do have full confidence in the leadership of the department as led by you, Minister, and we do have full confidence in the leadership of the city in dealing with this matter in a manner that benefits all the members of the South African population. This meeting stays adjourned. Thank you.
Small correction. I'm sorry. I apologize. But it will be amiss for me not to correct the House or make them understand. And I think I'm apologizing again for not bringing it up. This judgment which the City of Cape Town has got from the judge is about the people who are outside the church, not about the people who are inside. Because for the people who are inside, police have been asking, and the judge also, it's a private area. You need the owner of the church.
So Minister, we can close this meeting without that point. Let's allow the meeting to close in a more proper way of capturing whatever we're agreeing upon. That point can be canvassed outside this meeting. I think it's a point that we can close the meeting, because okay. If you raise that matter, another person wants to raise another point, then we'll not be able to run the meeting properly. So the meeting is closed on that note. Thank you very much.